This is Radio Dreaming.
We're artists, we're working up with Geopark.
Why are you working up with Geopark?
We stayed 40 days and 40 nights.
Are you doing stories on the ground?
Part of what we've been doing is like talking to people, listening, taking audio recordings. Mm. We're going to make a little piece for a radio.
Oh.
Our idea is like to send it over here and get them to play it locally.
Oh.
Like on Cavern Community Radio or one of the Fermanagh radios.
Mm-hmm.
And also in our home places. So.
There is an ancient Celtic tradition that says the land remembers everything. In Radio Dreaming, we explore dreams of place and how lands speak through dreamers. I'm Claire.
I'm Anna.
Join us now in the borderlands of Erra and Northern Ireland to meet the people, places, creatures and things of Marble Arch Caves Global Geopark.
Radio Dreaming Episode 1, Dreams, Food and the Edible Landscape.
Chapter 1, Feeding Dreams.
Egbahu Aislingi.
Since people and animals have been having dreams, there are those who have sought to influence their outcomes. Dreamers have called upon a vast array of techniques and potions, from the gloopy to the geological, to potentize their visions. We heard that Marmite's an effective potentizer of dreams, and it's worked for us. For those of you not familiar with Marmite, it's a salty, sticky condiment made from yeast extract. Eat a bit of Marmite on toast at bedtime and look out for your dreams.
So on this project, we're pretty focused on food. We're making lunch right now and talking about our dreams and things. And it reminded me of a tool, actually, that my mom gave me, a dreaming tool. It was when I had disturbing dreams or nightmares or something, and she would remind me of this tool. And the tool was to imagine going on a picnic with all of the people that I really, really loved and enjoyed being with, and then one step further, to imagine what kind of food they'd be bringing to the picnic. Think about the taste, think about how yummy it would be, think about how much fun it would be to be with all those people. It was like an imaginative journey that would actually change my dream state, because it wouldn't be a scared kind of state. It would be like I'd feel kind of happy and uplifted and more comfortable again. Usually I would imagine it in some sort of subalpine meadow or something, which is where we would go for picnics as a kid, and it usually worked.
Chapter 2, Nourishing the Dreamers.
E kohu na naishlingori.
Our memories of Marble Arch Caves Geopark are now stored as smells and tastes.
Boxty pancakes, boxty in the griddle, boxty in the pan. If you can't make boxty, you'll never get a man. Boxty is a potato bread traditional to Northern Ireland, the mixture of which can also be converted into pancakes. 1 pound of old potatoes weighed after peeling, salt and white pepper, 1/2 ounce of butter, 1/4 pint of milk, 6 ounces of self-raising flour, 1 teaspoon of baking powder, and 1 small egg beaten.
Food seems to find its way into our dreams in many forms.
Just now, Claire and I are working on the editing phase of this programme, and last night I had a dream which was a kind of food vision. It was a vision of the future, I think, and I could hear a woman calling. She was calling out for food. She wanted me to give her some food, any food. I didn't know the reason she was calling. I thought maybe she had been confined into the flat for whatever reason, by someone else or by herself, and she could no longer go out for food. And later on in the same dream, I found myself outside another flat, and 3 women were coming out. One of them, her skin was sort of loose around her neck, as if she had been fairly fat. And they were asking me for food, and I said that I was already sharing some food. And it suddenly dawned on me that these very ordinary people were asking me for food. And I said, "Is it the financial crisis?" And the girl said, "Yes, it is." And I realised at that point that she was wearing this thick coat because nobody could afford central heating.
My mom recently told me a really great dream food story about my Uncle John and Uncle Francis. During a 3-month-long epic backcountry hike in the Grand Canyon, they began to have some food visions. They very, very carefully planned out their food and their caloric intake and buried barrels of food along the way, but what they really, really, really missed was bread and rolls. And so as they continued on this 3-month-long hike, they actually started to see bread forms and roll forms in the landscape. Boulders became big loaves and crispy rolls. So that's a sort of interesting landscape food vision that comes from my family.
Last night we began to talk about what we were going to eat for breakfast, and this got quite fantastic. So this morning we're going to have stewed pears and gooseberries, and then we're going to have a sprinkling of crunchy cereal on top with soya custard. So we're going to realise our food dream vision. Other animals probably have dream food visions too. I think this is probably a large part of what they dream.
What's your food vision? Dreamers have always needed nourishment. Through time, various foods and preparation methods have kept dreamers dreaming.
Our housekeeper used to make up fish cakes. My father and I came home with 4 fish or something, like 4 or 5 fish. And she would cook up the fish for dinner, and then she would sort of make fish cakes of the rest and press them and have them for the next day or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the dinner, a huge pot of potatoes would be put on in general, you know. And after the dinner was over, potatoes that were left over were peeled and mashed up, mixed with flour and salt and pepper, and folded out into a cake and baked on the pan. And then it was cut into 6 pieces, and then each piece was cut that way and fried.
Oh, Done pizzas, burgers and chop suey. Done's not fat for a wee Huey. Done spaghetti rice and chow mein. Done's not fat for a grow and wean.
As a child, Margaret Gallagher was lazy, or so she tells us. She didn't want to do anything. And that's kind of lucky, because she's still here in her family's thatched, whitewashed cottage in Bow. When we arrive for breakfast, the table is laid with a feast fit for kings.
Anyone want me to make them toast with the long toasting fork over the fire? If they do,
I kind of would, just for the experience, but right. I'm happy to eat this bread.
Well,
so
they aren't eating whatever
yeah.
you get.
Yep.
Mm.
That's the handy.
Is there sugar? Anyway.
Not leave the sugar. Of course there is. This yeah. is British. How I do my toasting.
Mmm, yeah, perfect. Mm.
I want one of those toasting forks.
Mmm.
How do you want toast?
Chapter 3, Eating the Landscape.
A good way to discover more about a place is to focus in on its edible elements, the edible landscape. You can learn a lot from ingesting, observing and dreaming with plants and things.
We kicked off our 40 days and 40 nights by crunching on hawthorn leaves at Shannon Pot.
And I'm going to eat one of the leaves off the hawthorn tree.
The landscape is full to bursting with flavours and textures.
Tasty windblown tree. Tasty and squeaky. And squeaky.
The only other thing I know about hawthorn is you can eat most of it, can't you?
Mm.
You can eat the leaves and the flowers and the bread and cheese we call the leaves. I don't know what other people call them. Yeah.
Elderflowers make wonderful fritters. We made these for breakfast during our stay at Helen's National Trust cottage on the Crom Estate. Our very special batter from chickpea flour was fermented overnight with kefir. Fried in red palm oil, our fritters have a light dusting of icing sugar.
Some geese, you know, that you find on the bugs, blanket bugs, they're insectivorous, so they're carnivorous.
Oh, those.
Plants. Butterworts are also carnivorous.
Are they?
So you mentioned there the midges, and then the midges have their place. So say, for example, when it grows the purple flower, you know, they would be attracted necessarily either to the colour, or indeed if they're just hovering around, those leaves have like a sticky substance on them. So when the insect lands on it, it is stuck, and then the butterwort will have their digestive juices on the outside and eat the insect, if you see what I mean, from the outside.
Like through their leaves?
So like yeah, it's carnivorous.
Wow, wow.
So that's how it gets.
Yeah, this might be insects
on it.
In yeah. it, look.
You Isn't know, so amazing? You get it in nutrient poor acidic environments, because it's an additional way of it adding its nutrient input.
Mm.
They're really cool.
In that little hole.
Oh.
And if you put in your finger, that's what he'll do. There's a mark of his.
Really?
Yes, I do gather some worms in the morning from a dig a piece over there, and I gather worms, and I just put my finger in to let him know I was up, and he snapped at me.
Oh.
And he's only a wee thing that size.
Margaret has inherited her close friendship with robins from her ancestors. But before the arrival of humans on these hills, the robin would have followed other earth-digging mammals such as wild boar, bear, and badger, who foraged for delicious tubers, truffles, and grubs, turning up worms and insects for the hungry robin.
Oh, there's all the well-less traces of all the fox get them surely, and then the mink and the pine marten.
Yeah, she doesn't have any. I think, was it her geese?
Yeah.
Got by the
fox.
The pine marten.
Ah, the pine marten chocolate.
The humble potato plays an important part in Irish culture, and no one here can forget the famine caused by the potato blight. We visited organic potato fields, ate chips and black lion, and nervously dipped our fingers into glasses of pochin, the famous potato-sauced Irish hooch. During our visit, we ferried potatoes around in the car back and forth over the border.
Traditional farmer Ignatius Maguire is passionate about his Latoon homelands, where he taught us to mow using a hand scythe and showed us his potato fields.
What kind of potatoes do you grow here?
Like them as early ones. Most of them was as pinks and some roosters. Some I use my own seed, and if I run out of seed, I get any seed I can get and put them down. But the pinks are supposed to be, Kerris pinks are supposed to be the best. Mm. Oh, you get pests all right. The badgers. It's the worst, coming on to the October, and they don't take any, but they're off the slugs. Mm. But they don't touch the potatoes. I don't have any disagreement with the badgers at all.
And is this all for the family? Would you have any extra?
Oh God, I wouldn't have any extra, wouldn't have enough at that even.
Really?
I always leave them in the ground, and I always dig them as I want them.
That field, Jim sold me that field as well. So.
Have you got that field as well?
Yeah. Oh,
that's lovely. What do you use it for anything? Or?
Yeah, I've grown like spuds and vegetables.
Fantastic.
But it's more than a field, that. It's beautiful.
Uh-huh.
And there was, I went down once to do my spuds, and there was a hen pheasant sat in amongst them. And she goes off making a dreadful racket trying to get me to follow her. There's 14 wee chicks. And
my
I wouldn't
goodness.
Have noticed them except three of them ran. The rest of them stayed absolutely still.
Still, yes. Isn't that amazing? 14 of a family.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yes.
The sound of nature's dreaming is the hum of bees and the audible activity of the hive. In the Marble Arch Caves Geopark, bees continue to fly defunct smugglers' routes with bags of valuable pollen, even now that the borders between north and south are open. Honey is a prize, guarded by the bees, but there are still people who take the risk once or twice a year to steal it. The temptation is sometimes just too great.
You mean they just, you'll find a little...
A little nest. It'd be covered with nice moss, and you see the bees when you be mowing there, or maybe working the hay.
Mm.
You'd be glad of it now. It's wonderful.
So we're exploring different ecologies, ecologies of sound, dreaming, the natural landscape, culture and art, and the relationships between people, animals and things.
Chapter 4, Dreaming Cultures.
Kultur na Häschlinge.
It's easy to forget that the biodiversity of a particular place, its animals, plants and things, actually shape our cultures. The rich flavours of these lands have given rise to unique dreams, cultures and heritage.
In prehistoric times, hazel provided sustenance and shelter for the first peoples in these northern climes, following the great ice melt. Its protein-packed nuts were stored for the winter months, and its supple branches gave rise to baskets.
Definitely they were living on the water, yeah. And it would have been a great landscape to live in prehistoric times, you know, like pre-agriculture, because there would have been plenty here, a lot of fish, a lot of... you know, berries, a lot of fruit. You know, we've been very, I think, a very bountiful place myself. Yeah, yeah.
Where shore turtles were part of the varied diet of the original inhabitants and made a very tasty treat for otters, lynx, seals, golden eagles, bears, wolves, fox, fish and badgers.
Chapter 5, Species Dreaming.
Gnéine Häschlinge.
Do you think Oscar ever has doggy dreams? Mm. Have you ever seen him do like little running while he's sleeping?
Never seen Oscar dreams, but in my dreams when I try to run really fast, I end up going so slow because it's your brain, it knows if you do that, you'll start running for real.
Exploring the habits of non-human dreamers is an important tool in our Place Dreamers toolkit. According to some scientists, REM sleep and the ability to dream are embedded in the biology of many organisms. Dolphins experience minimum REM, humans are in the middle, and the opossum and the armadillo are among the most prolific dreamers.
Oh, he got it. Does your dog eat ice cream? Because someone gave us an ice cream.
Yeah.
Do you want to give it to us?
It's a reward.
It's a reward for his gallant retrieval, you know?
But it's a bit melted now.
Yeah.
Oh. Here. Oh.
No, he knows it.
I've been watching a couple of coots. It could be more hens, but I think the coots bathing and swimming, and they're duck diving. You know, their motivation for duck diving surely is to look for food, and they were coming up with bits and bobs from the bottom. But I think, you know, just as you dive, you kind of visualise your dive, and you visualise what you might find and what you're hoping to find at the bottom, and maybe what it feels like as it goes down your throat. I'm sure coots have much more exciting dreams and complicated dreams than that, but that's the first level that I can start to understand, I think. Dreams
that kind of arise from the animals' bodies that, like, scientists might call biological drive or, you know, biology. In a way, it's more poetic and perhaps more accurate to call them species dreams. The knowledge of what the fish looks like when it's underwater and how to actually shoot its neck to spear the fish, and then how to pull its head back up and shake it and then gobble it down, open up its throat. You know, that's a kind of dream in a way.
Yeah, like a practical dream of how to do things and how to be. And it is interesting thinking about that, if you think that perhaps we're dreaming all the time and we don't really recognise it or listen to it, perhaps because of science and the way we've been brought up, the way we've been taught that those are things of childhood. But the animals, you know, maybe they don't have those kind of inhibitions and controls from their culture.
Radio Dreaming is edited and produced by Anna Kelleher and Claire Cote. For more about this project, please visit the Dreaming Place blog and online archive, www.dreamingplace.eu.
Dreaming Place was supported by National Lottery through Arts Council England and Marble Arch Caves Global Geopark. Special thanks to Diane Henshaw, Seamus aka Jim Nolan, Rose Kremen, Dave Scott, Martina McGee, Tommy McLaughlin, Ignatius Maguire of Belcoo, Margaret Gallagher of Bow, Bridget Maguire and John T of Galloon Island, and Helen, Miriam and Ruby of Crom, Amy Crow of Cavan Community Radio and her mother who speaks the Irish Gaelic headings. Our thanks also for exceptional musical contributions by Susan Hughes on fiddle, Alan Milligan on boron, the Buskers of Baleek and the birds, insects, trees, fires, bogs, paddles, breezes, lakes, rivers and rain of Marble Arch Caves Global Geopark.
Beagilin and Hirdorella .radio na Hashlinga.
Join us next time for Radio Dreamin'.